You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 3rd of January 2015 on Monocle 24.
New launches and sad goodbyes. Buoyant markets for magazines or printed dailies on a downward spiral. A crystal ball or perhaps an eye for print. What to expect and where to expect it as we scope what will keep those presses humming in 2015 here on The Stack. Today on The Stack, we attempt to look over the horizon at the dawn of a new year in print. A magazine renaissance in full swing, or isolated oases of showcase independent publishing in a digitised desert. We'll speak to an editor and also a true magazine expert to get something of a forecast. Plus, we head to Dublin's fair city and look at a very pretty new journal.
The initial idea was a sort of a kind of anti Condé Nast Traveler or anti travel and leisure, and that I guess is why it's quite a lo-fi magazine.
All that and plenty more besides for you today on The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. I am delighted to be joined today by two trusted friends of the programme. Rob Alderson is here, the editor of the nifty little magazine Treasure. Printed pages. Rob, great to have you with us. Why are you laughing? What's wrong with that?
I'm just really enjoying the phrase nifty little treasure. I've never been...
It can't be the first time that someone said that to you, I'm sure.
You flirt.
Now tell me a little bit about... we're kind of, you know, it's the start of a new year in... it's the start of a new year. It's also the start of a new year in magazines. What are the kind of, I don't know, broad themes that got you excited? Are there things about printed pages and the journey that you're still going on? What are you sort of most looking forward to, I guess, as we look ahead?
Well, we've got a bit of an announcement, and it's an exclusive announcement that we're going to tell The Stack, which is that from next year, printed pages is going to go biannually from quarterly, which it's been for the last 2 years. It's a decision that we are actually really excited about. I think when you look at our masthead and you see the amount of people that we have working on it, I think we do an awful lot with a very, very small team. Mm. And I think while I'm really proud of the eight issues and particularly the last four issues we've put out, I think we've put out, you know, four very good magazines. And I think we have the chance with this change to actually put out two really excellent magazines. And so I'm really excited. There's lots of things already in the pipeline coming together for it. And it's a change. It's a big change for us. But I think it seems to be a change that makes sense.
Well, we'll talk a bit more about what that change in sort of magazine metabolism will mean. But I should also introduce our other guest, another of our dear friends here on The Stack. It's magazine guru Jeremy Leslie of Mag Culture. Are you happy with that
I'm
one?
I'm liking that too.
This is good. Everyone's loving it so far.
You've been working on it. Adjectives.
I've tried very hard. Now, Jeremy, what about for yourself? I mean, you know, 2015. It's a new year. Is it about, you know, new horizons? Is it about exciting new stories, or is it about, you know, great magazines that continue to do great work? What particular things are sort of you most looking forward to?
I think the big challenge for me and what we're doing at Mag Culture is sort of rising to this tide of new magazines that continues to pour over us and deal with that better. It's been a very busy year, both in the studio and on the writing side of things. But it's, you know, I'm very aware that there are stacks of magazines building up that I haven't managed to cover, and I need to work out a way. And that's what we're working out at the moment, is how to get better coverage of these magazines, because there are so many deserving titles that you just you miss.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess that's a good news story, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're
sort of
kind of inundated.
And obviously, I mean, what will help is if there's only two issues of printed pages.
Exactly. You can be more economical with your reading time. Let's talk a little bit more about that then, Rob. So you sort of explained that, I guess, the rationale. How do you anticipate that changing? Because you talked about, you know, it's obviously easier to spend, you know, more time and to make, you know, maybe a great piece, a truly excellent piece. Is it about the time, or do you think it's some other kind of part of the mindset that changes?
I think it is about the time, but I think it's more about the time in the gestation period of the ideas, if you like. You know, at the moment with Quarterly, Jeremy and I were talking about this before we came on, you know, it's a very quick, you know, one goes out the door and we're on to the next one, and there's not an awful lot of time once we've secured an interview or had an idea for an essay or a feature. There's not an awful lot of time just to sit and live with that and to think about it. And I think, you know, to let that percolate is a really important part of the editorial process. And actually, the more we can do that, I think it's not about, you know, taking finished pieces and then trying to trump them up or buff them up into something even better. I think it's actually much more about those initial ideas and those connections that we're trying to make or those things we're trying to explore and taking the time to do that in a way that maybe has a little bit more heft and a little bit more weight and doesn't feel so pressurised.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, I imagine you're probably sort of fairly, I'm sure you sort of empathise, and I imagine also you're probably quite impressed to hear the way that Rob is talking about that, mm-hmm. the strategy, that approach. Do you think that there is occasionally, you mentioned the sort of, you know, the sheer number of new titles, are there sometimes people who are maybe, you know, running before they can walk or pushing too hard to have this kind of turnover that maybe doesn't suit their creative processes?
I think that can happen. I mean, I think in terms of hearing what Rob's saying, it's a very sensible reflection of what It's Nice That are doing generally. I think they've got the outlet for the quick bang bang. You know, they've got a huge amount of content every day, let alone quarter on the website. And so if you're going to do something in print that has a more reflective approach, then I think it seems to me to make sense to give yourself a time to be reflective properly and be more certain about the editorial decisions you're making.
What'll be interesting, Rob, I wonder, is, you know, I bet you'll still have that manic last few minutes. Regardless of gestation periods, all this kind of thing, there'll still be production week mayhem, but I guess you wouldn't have it any other way, right?
Completely. That's why we do this, I suppose. It's for that, you know, squeaky bum time, final week, that last typo you spot, you know, that mm-hmm. last image that's not cropped properly, that last caption that doesn't make any sense at all. And I think there are, you know, you don't get into doing this unless you have a certain perverse pleasure in that kind of process.
Now, we've got some nice hearty stacks of magazines on our desk here in Midori House in front of us. Jeremy, maybe let's turn to you. I mean, I guess it's interesting also to sort of look at the magazines you have with you in the context of, you know, 2015 and in the context mm-hmm. of looking forward. Maybe pick out something that speaks to, you know, maybe a trend or theme that perhaps will be sort of important this year.
Well, I think that there's a couple of magazines here which we'll all be familiar with, and I'm sure your listeners are. The Gourmand and Delayed Gratification have both been around and have both kind of established reputations, and people will know them. Been around for a few years now. And they are both, in my mind, they both represent magazines that are really kind of reaching for a kind of almost middle ground now between being an indie title and being a mainstream title. These are magazines that are moving above that into some sort of middle area, which is really interesting to me. And I think that's a trend that we're going to see more magazines reaching that. As they reach the kind of, they just reach a maturity which absolutely speaks, you know, they're beyond that kind of racing just to get something done. They're now making something which could potentially have a serious, you know, commercial, proper, established publishing future.
It was interesting. We talked to David from the Gourmand quite recently, mm-hmm. actually, on the stack, and he's talking about, you know, some more changes they made in this mm-hmm. evolution. I think it's interesting you talk about that sort of magazine maturity. And I wondered, Rob, is that something you're very aware of, you know, when you look at other titles as well, this sort of growth process that things go through? And it, I mean, it's interesting, I guess, with your own title, but also to look at others and look at how they're, you know, evolving and finding their feet and maybe moving more into that sort of middle ground that Jeremy's talking about there.
Completely, and I think that the new issue of The Gourmand is the best example of actually that. I only actually saw it this week for the first time and had that feeling of flicking through it, of being part excited and part utterly envious about what Dave and Marina have pulled off with it. I do think it feels like it has suddenly, like you said, moved into this new level in everything from the layout, the content, the use of imagery, the type, the collaboration they've done with Monotype.
Across the board. I mean, every single criteria you might try and evaluate it on, it is up there at the top. The production values, and the working with the typography, the design, and just the range of content is astonishing. It's so rich in its breadth, from kind of diagrammatic representations of modernist kitchens to superb photography, great writing. I mean, it's a wonderful magazine.
It feels very, very confident. It feels very self-assured, and I think I've always been interested and excited by what the guys are doing there, but actually this issue, like I say, feels like it's come of age. And I think what's interesting is that I like it when people who work in magazines are really open about that process, that it is a constant, you know, trial and error and improvement, and there's always things when you get your mag back that you want to do differently next time, and I think we should be quite open and discuss that. I think that's quite a nice, exciting thing.
Yeah.
And I think what you see is, I thought the third issue of Riposte, you know, it's not at the stage The Gourmand is at yet, but you can certainly see that evolution of it, and I think it's an amazingly admirable thing when you see people who you know, doing what they do and taking it seriously enough to keep trying to strive to make it better.
Yeah. And some magazines don't manage to do that. They do kind of become quite formulaic and templated. They, you know, and there's, you know, by issue three or four, it's still as good as it was at issue one. But actually, one of the things that is at the heart of great magazine making is this developmental kind of organic growth thing, where you kind of, it grows, people get more assured, more confident, and then the product gets better, and that's what's great. That's, you know, and that's, you know, that's what, going back to the initial discussion with the printed pages, that's what you're going through, you know, gradually honing it and bettering it and changing the regularity of its publication is a part of that.
We'll talk in a bit more detail about some of the other magazines and maybe where they are on that same kind of evolutionary process a little later in the programme. Up next on the stack, though, we'll be crossing the Irish Sea. We're heading off to Dublin after this.
With mountains on the mind, Monocle Films dispatched a filmmaker to the heart of Slovenia to visit the Elan ski-making factory, where heritage meets modernity.
Today you cannot fake people, you cannot fake consumers with a, you know, with a well-created stories. You have to have a core substance, and our core substance is this passion for innovation, engineering, and that's what we believe has a value today and will have even more value in the future.
Our Alpino special on Slovenian ski-making masters is now playing in the film's menu on monocle.com.
Now we do indeed cross the Irish Sea. Dublin is a city that you love and hate at the same time. That's the idea behind a new Irish magazine, We Are Dublin. The quarterly publication wants to provide an authentic snapshot of Ireland's capital, exposing both the glamour and the grime of the city. So what is Dublin really like beneath the surface, and how hard is it to convey that message to readers? Monocle's Barbara Feeney went to meet Conor Purcell, the founder and editor of We Are Dublin, to find out more.
I'm Conor Purcell, and I run a magazine called We Are Dublin, and I recently moved back to Dublin after 9 years in Dubai, where I launched my first independent magazine called We Are Here. And now, since I've come back to Dublin, I'm going to focus on We Are Dublin, which is a quarterly independent publication focusing on the city.
It's a beautiful magazine. It's a real snapshot of kind of real Dublin. Tell me a little bit about where the idea came from.
I guess originally I was more inspired by sort of anger at the magazines like Travel and Leisure and Condé Nast Traveller, which I felt were simply just sales and marketing tools and were pretty unrealistic, and you were constantly being sold destinations or hotels or interior design. The initial idea was a sort of a kind of anti-Condé Nast Traveller or anti-Travel and Leisure, and that I guess is why it's quite a lo-fi magazine. But the main reason, I guess, for the design and the imagery is just because I didn't have the money to hire a designer or a photographer. So I then just did it myself, which is why everything is quite simple. And I just wanted to make sure any money that was spent was on the writing, or particularly on the paper stock and the printing.
Let's just take a look through the magazine. I have it here in front of me. There was something just striking in your editor's letter at the beginning, and you're just writing about Dublin, and you say Dublin is a city you can love and hate at the same time, and then you go on to say, but cities are not a zero-sum game, you can be conflicted when thinking of Dublin, and that's okay. Do you try and kind of get this idea across in the magazine through the different writing and images that you have within it?
Yeah, I think that in a lot of magazines they're trying to maybe sell the city and they want to come to a conclusion about a place, whether that be a shop or a street or a city as a whole, and I think it's a bit more complicated than that. And particularly after living abroad for so long and then coming back to Dublin, in many ways I really love Dublin, but in many ways it's a frustrating place to live in. So I think it's okay to have those feelings. You don't automatically have to love the place you live in, and I think it's good to take a critical eye on a city, particularly after living in Dubai, where that never happened. And I don't think anything can get better if you don't criticize and like give feedback. And I think the good thing about Dublin is you're able to do that, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to set up this magazine. All the writers I use are either living in Dublin or from Dublin, so I wanted to give their voice. So I would hope if people pick it up, they would get an idea, either good or bad, but maybe they would learn something that they haven't didn't know before, but also hopefully they would be like enjoy it as well. I wanted to try and inject some humour into it, and I didn't want it to be too dry or academic either.
This is the first issue of We Are Dublin. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the different stories, different articles, and the images that are in it? There's some beautiful images, particularly at the end of some Dublin faces. So if you can just tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, those photos were taken by a guy called Lorcan Finnegan on his iPhone, and he takes pictures of older men and women around Dublin in the inner city, and they have a very distinct style, I think, in terms of the makeup and the clothes. And it's certainly a group of people that you don't normally see. You see in Dublin, but you never see in a newspaper or magazine. So I think it was really cool when I came across his images on Instagram and asked if he'd contribute. And then we have a story by a girl called Trina Lally about Grange Gorman, and it's now been turned into a campus for students in Dublin, but it was, of course, a mental institution. So I guess it's talking about how you change something, but is the ghosts of that, what it used to be, still around? And it's also a part of the city I think a lot of people don't know about. It's kind of out of the way, and it's not on any of the main thoroughfares into town. So I like talking about the parts of the city that are maybe slightly at the edges of the city in terms of people's consciousness, but maybe they're right in the centre of geographically. But I think it's nice to talk about these places you maybe take for granted, but have never really thought about that much. So that was an interesting one to do.
Are you unique in what you do, or are there any similar publications like this in Dublin or even within Ireland?
The first thing I did when I came back was find the other magazine editors to try and meet them and figure out the market. There's a music magazine called Cult, there's a fashion magazine called Thread, there's a football magazine called Pogue McGoal. So there's a few smaller independent magazines. They're all quite different. I mean, one magazine I really like, which is more of a periodical or journal, is the Dublin Review. And I guess if my magazine would be somewhere between the Dublin Review and Totally Dublin, which is a listings magazine, I wanted to get somewhere in the middle, so more accessible than the Dublin Review, but less commercial than Totally Dublin. So I think there's nobody really doing exactly what I'm doing. Everyone seems to have a more of a niche that they focus on, which makes sense. But for me, I think the niche is just Dublin and good writing, I'd hope.
That was Monocle's Barbara Feeney in conversation with Connor Purcell, the founder and editor of We Are Dublin. I know that's a magazine that you're sort of familiar with, Jeremy. It's interesting to pick up on a couple of things. We talked earlier on about talking about, you know, the process of, you know, making great magazines and it being sort of a collaboration. It was interesting, Connor there mentioning how he, you know, he sought the views of the sort of the Dublin scene, you know, other people who are in the magazine trade. And that's very important. And I think you can often detect that when you look at the finished product, can't you?
Yes, I think it's the context is very important. I think, it can play both ways. I think sometimes great magazines come out of the blue from nowhere without paying attention to what's around them. But I think, I mean, Connor has been involved in publishing in various ways for some time, and he has a very intelligent approach to making magazines, and I think that shows in the magazine. I mean, it's a fascinating magazine because it's based on, I mean, the original idea was that he makes it on his iPhone, so that all the images are created in Instagram, and he prepares it. That obviously it's laid out on the page, but the content is sourced on the go rather than
these more traditional, more structured ways of doing things. I think it's quite interesting, and it's interesting to see that you can have great print titles that, you know, come out of these very different ways of doing things that some people would have said, oh, well, this is anathema to magazine making, but actually
it's taking digital content production and moving it into print. The magazine was originally called We Are Here, and he did an edition in Dubai. He went to Kathmandu and did it, so it was kind of more of a travel magazine originally, so hence the kind of wanting to go around with the phone and record
and
stuff,
be very
and he's
mobile.
Moved home to Dublin, and now he's adapting that, and again it's that kind of developmental thing, he's adapting that to the fact that he's back home in Dublin and trying to make a magazine in that context.
Interesting process. Let's delve back into our stacks of magazine. Rob Alderson, of course, is still with us. Rob, maybe pick out one or two that you'd like to talk about as well now.
Yeah, absolutely. I've put a couple of things which I think might reflect a trend we're going to see over the next 12 months, and that is brands borrowing some of the qualities and characteristics that we've seen in the independent magazine sector for the last year or two, really. I think it's very interesting. This is something that came through this week. It's called Timberland. It is for the shoe manufacturer Timberland. But it's done by Document Studios, which is run by David Helgqvist, who used to be at Port. I don't think he's still at Port, but this is his new kind of venture. And he's produced this, I mean, really beautiful kind of print. And it borrows not just kind of a tone of voice, it borrows a kind of visual tone, a way of layout and using imagery that is very much something that Jeremy, we've seen a lot in independent magazines over the last year or so. You know, I think what's interesting is that, you know, in terms of branded content, there's nothing new about branded content, but I think that in terms of brands producing print publications, they've been a little bit behind the curve. I think brands have done fantastic films for a long time, they've done fantastic installations and things, but quite often it's quite excruciating when brands try and go into print. And I think what's interesting is more and more brands are not just borrowing the kind of ideas and ideals from independent magazines, they're actually taking the people. I think it's interesting that Alex Teague Walker, who anonymous sex journal, has done Pineapple for Airbnb. You know, they've gone and found someone who knows this world. They haven't tried to have their in-house teams ape what's going on. The fact that Timberland have reached out to David Helgqvist to do that. This is another one I just brought along. This is the Human Being Journal, which is done by the Need Supply Co., which is a shop in Richmond in Virginia. And they've just hired a new editor-in-chief, a guy called Tag Christoph. And this is the first issue he's done. And it's absolutely fantastic. You know,
That is a lovely magazine.
It's beautiful, you know, and the people they're talking to, Raphael Rosendahl, Unit Editions, Marcelo Gomez does some photography for it. You know, these are the people who are in interesting independent magazines. And I think we're going to see this. I think brands have suddenly cottoned on about how to do this. And I think we might see more and more of this over the next 12 months.
Absolutely. I think allied to that is this brands, but also digital brands wanting to do something in print. We've seen that over this year, and I think that will continue. You mentioned Pineapple, which is the example. Even Monotype with the recorder, you know, a digital typography business wanting to return to making print. And there's, you know, countless other examples. Pitchfork Review is a lovely piece of print from the website that originally destroyed the music press. So.
I just wonder for both of you, I mean, do you have any unease about the, I guess, as you described it, Rob, that sort of aping of the successful, you know, notes from the sort of indie sector? Because, you know, this is a sector that, you know, we're all very keen to support, we're very proud of, and we know how important it is to kind of safeguard it from, you know...
Well, I think Rob made the point that the most appropriate point there, and that is that I mean, it's one thing to start trying to copy or rip off or do something, but it's another thing to go to a studio who are making these independent magazines and then work with them on your own magazine. I think that's admirable. I mean, that's how it should be. I think a lot of the smaller magazines rely on commercial relationships in other spheres in order for their own magazines to survive. And I think, you know, as long as you're partnering on an equal basis and you're happy with the end result, and it has to be editorially on the edge as well as, you know, design wise. And I think that's the case with the Human Being magazine. As you rightly say, the choice of editorial content is on the money as the visuals, and then it's a great magazine in its own right, and the brand wins.
And that's the key point, really. There's an interesting quote from David Helgqvist talking about Document Studios, and he kind of said, you know, it's built on editorial integrity and an aspiration to create desire. I think we have to be open about that. There's two things going on here, but as Jeremy says, the key thing is the balance. If ultimately the aspiration to create desire, which let's face it, has been a part of fashion magazines and things for decades, really, but if that starts to overwhelm the editorial integrity, then you've got a problem. But I think what you have here, particularly with Human Being, is this example where they've got the balance absolutely right. I actually didn't know it was anything to do with the shop for a long time. Now, maybe they've gone too far the other way, they might say, I don't know. But I think it's, you know, with any branded content, it is about having that balance. And if you try and slap people with the brand, you kind of slap them around the face with the brand too much, that's not going to work.
They're a bit more refined, aren't they?
Or indeed pretend that you're not. I mean, you've got to just be very open.
I just wonder, in terms of, you know, for looking to 2015, you mentioned this trend for the year, which I think you're quite right to identify. Is another trend for maybe, you know, magazine publishers or editors who are just starting out, is one of the trends that they are going to themselves need to be a lot more connected to some of these other commercial imperatives. We always talked about, you know, the role that advertising plays, but this idea of aligning oneself with brands, maybe doing completely separate content, maybe even branded content for another title, as part of your, say, you know, studio's success to make sure that it can be sustained. Do you think it's a necessity now that people starting out factor that in right from the beginning?
I don't necessarily think they need to factor that in, depending on their business model, but they certainly shouldn't shut it off as an option straight away. I think it's very, very naive to you know, go, well, we're never going to, of course, you know, dirty ourselves or anything like that. I think the Gourmand, again, are an interesting example of, they've done some interesting collaborations with various brands I've seen over the last 6 months, and kind of away from the mag, a lot of them, but I think they felt right, they felt credible, they felt creatively interesting, and I think as long as that's the case, then that's fine. It's interesting, you know, a lot of people kind of ask us, you know, what would be your advice if starting up a magazine, and we're always going to say, you do have to kind of start with the balance sheet, you know, otherwise you have that awful thing where you get first issue, which is fantastic, and you never see it again. So, and a good way of helping that develop and bringing in that income is to partner with brands. I think you have to do it in the right way, wherever possible, but I don't think it's something that anyone should be ignoring or shutting off, for sure.
Time is against us. It's been compelling and insightful as ever. Speaking to you very, very briefly, Jeremy, what sort of watchword for 2015? What should we sort of be looking out for? Is there anything that's, you know, you're nervous about, excited about in particular, or is it just that's how we started? You know, the general sort of robust health of the industry is the thing that you're kind of most happy about.
I'm very happy. Quantity wise, I guess I would be concerned. I think there is an element of repetition occurring in the independent sector, which we've crossed upon in these discussions before. That worries me, but I think there are always other people out there who are going to kind of still burst forth and do something different. Rob mentioned advice to people think of starting their own magazines. I think it's important to have a look at what's out there and then go and do your own thing. There's no point if you're going to go to the hassle and angst and pain of making a magazine. Make it your own magazine. Don't go and copy someone else.
That's a pretty good note on which to end. Thanks to both of my guests today. That was Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture, and also to Rob Alderson, here with his exclusive news on the stack about printed pages. Gentlemen, thanks very much and have a great 2015. And that does bring us to the end of edition 123 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Special thanks once again to my guests, Jeremy Leslie and Rob Alderson, to our producer on the programme, David Pleasant, and to our studio manager, Claire Urban. Comments, queries are welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us again at the same time next Saturday. You can also catch up with this and indeed any of our past brilliant episodes at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, for this week, from me, Tom Edwards, and all of the Stack team, it's goodbye.